through history.
Hello, race fans. Welcome to.
I hear an echo, echo, echo.
Here we are.
Hello, race fans. Welcome to this edition of Racing Through History, a.k.a. The Goat Rodeo, as our friends call us. Hope y'all having a good time tonight. We are. And thanks for being on our whatever it is we're on here. What is this, the internet? Yeah.
Something.
We got Bobby wired up yet? No, he's getting
wired. No, he's still playing.
He's getting wired. He's a late entry.
Yeah,
late entry tonight, man. Ladies and gentlemen, the bopper from Charlotte, North Carolina, all the way up near Bobby's Auto Parts, the home of the endless warranty. He's getting his.
We're getting him strapped
into the car right now, getting the radio attached. We'll have him on here in a minute. Let's go out west to Dawsonville and say hello to Cody Densmore. How are you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. Glad to be here. Good to see you, too.
Glad to be here, too.
Yeah, man. All that jazz.
Hey, we got that saying all the way to India.
How about that, man? How about that? Yeah.
David Pearson lives in India, in Mogadishu, somewhere like that.
Mumbai.
Right next to, what was the name of that beach? Goa.
Go on.
The Myrtle Beach equivalent of India.
Sandeep Banerjee will be listening to this tomorrow morning on his way to work or whenever. Sandeep, we're still talking about you, buddy. We miss you. You'll have to come back.
That's our version of the morning drive.
It is, yeah, man. It is. Out in the lair, the legend is there. How are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Jeff. Sitting here in my newly decorated or redecorated lair.
There you go. Got Bob Hissom coming on tonight, talking about Stocks for Tots, right?
Yep, that's a big thing for him in the North Carolina Auto Racing Hall of Fame, and it's something that I certainly support, as I know you do, and I think Patrick Reynolds as well. So
we do. We have.
I'm looking forward to seeing
what
we
have every year, and will again this year.
Yep.
Awesome stuff. Coastal Jack Walker is in the house with another historic race place, historic race finish for tonight. How are you doing tonight,
CJ? I'm doing great.
Where are we going tonight, man?
We are going back to Pensacola, Florida. We did a snowball derby three or four weeks ago, but since...
All the way back.
Since the snowball derby is this weekend, I thought we'd do the 1975 snowball derby.
That's awesome, cool. Man. That's awesome.
75.
That's cool.
75.
And ladies and gentlemen, just as we promised, sitting just to the right of Coastal Jack Walker...
75.
...is the one, the only bopper... Mr.
Hey,
Bobby
ladies and
Winston.
Gentlemen, Patrick Reynolds said, hey, I had trouble getting through tech.
Well, you did.
The freaking template didn't
fit. The laser measuring apparatus didn't work.
It didn't work.
Blinded him.
Yeah. I hate it with that laser measuring apparatus.
Yeah, that burns, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of stings.
In addition to being illegal, it stings.
It's illegal.
Yeah.
And sitting next to him, the man on the street, the splitter, Hewlin Oval Crash. How you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing just fine, Jeff. How about you?
Good. That's a good-looking hat you got on,
you like
man.
That hat? Yeah.
That's a good hat. I'm going to show the people my hat,
75.
Yeah, turn it on so they can see your hat, too.
Anyway.
But check out this old-school shirt I got.
I know, man. I've got one left that's still decent. I wore mine completely out. And the only problem is it don't cover my gut like it used to.
This was beginning to get a little tight.
I keep pulling it down, and the next time I turn around, there's a roll sticking out underneath. I don't know what caused that, do you?
I can't imagine.
I think my shirt shrunk.
That's it. It's
kind of like a splitter, but it's not quite.
It's just not quite.
Yeah. Down on the track.
I need to adjust it. I need to adjust those turnbuckles or whatever they are and get that thing down on the track.
Get it down just a little bit more. Take a packer out of both sides.
Yeah, that was a new term. That was a new term that I gleaned at Homestead, a new suspension terminology, a packer.
Oh, that's been around all year.
A packer. That's
it's nothing more than a bump stop shim that's on the bottom
stop.
Of the on the travel portion
what
of the shock.
What is the world coming to? That's what Jackie Gleason was saying.
Yeah.
Bump stop. What in the world? When I get home.
I remember when we first learned about bump steer. Now we're all the way into bump stop.
Yeah,
you know.
Why don't they just weld up the suspension?
Yeah. They almost have. Yeah. They all, by the time they get up to just about 100 miles an hour, they don't have much suspension.
And weld the A-frame in
place. We're close to that now. The tires are basically the suspension of the car right now.
Which is exactly like a go-kart.
Yeah. Right? And exactly. Do you remember back in the 60s watching the Grand Nationals, as they called them back then, cars go through the turns at Charlotte, the suspension would travel 6 or 8 inches through the turns.
Yeah.
I mean, you wondered why they didn't just go airborne when they would come to the top of the travel, that the suspension traveled so much.
And with all the air that's getting underneath it.
Yeah.
Well, they weren't exactly stable.
No, they weren't.
Which made for some really good racing.
That's why it took real drivers and not steering wheel holders to drive the things.
Well, I got a little bit of news to share with folks tonight as we get going. We've talked about this a little bit beforehand, but we kind of put off updating the stock car and drag racers websites for, they've been basically obsolete for about 3 years, maybe a little bit longer. We've been on that platform for 9 years, so I guess technically they've been obsolete for 6 years. But there are all kinds of issues with updates and the fact that there just wasn't really a great solution out there for that kind of content. But we finally bit the bullet, found it. We began the process, which is going to take several weeks for me to finish. Maybe in as short as 3 or 4, but I'm not sure. So we will have a brand new Racers Reunion family of sites. Instead of having so many sites as we've had in the past, we're going to combine at least 3 of them into one, maybe 4 if I can get that all worked out in the meantime. But one login to all the content. Basically, 15,000 people over 9 years have created almost 1 million pages of content. That's pretty cool.
That's hard for anybody to beat, isn't it?
It's hard for anybody to beat, man. You get up tomorrow and work as hard as you want to, and it's going to be hard to catch that.
Yep.
You know? So, you know, we've had some awesome contributors on Racers Reunion, providing great stories, photographs. One of the big points of contention that I had was the way the group fan club feature was set up, or is set up on the current site, we ended up gathering a substantial amount of history there in the comments section. And one of the problems I've had with other platforms was being able to migrate the comments in with the groups. You know, some platforms would do the groups, but they wouldn't bring in the comments. I'm told, and I'll believe it when I see it, and hopefully it's true, that we're going to be able to keep all that data and all that history that is part of those group sections. The fortunate thing is that the company that's doing this designed a program to migrate sites from Ning to their platform. And so they took all those things into consideration. There's more than a couple things we'll lose that we'll have to get used to. There's a lot of things that are different that we'll all get used to. But the good thing is that it's a new, modern, mobile-responsive platform. It's well-supported by Americans, which I really like. And they've been a big help to me over the last few days as we've been putting the whole thing together and getting the server set up and actually beginning the migration process.
So that's already in progress, Jeff?
Yeah, you guys won't see anything, any difference until we push the button to make it live. We will migrate everything into a temporary space where I will begin to design the site, group all the content, and create the way that you guys are going to be able to consume it.
All right, will that have anything to do when I tried to do a forum post?
No, it has nothing to do. If you're having any issues whatsoever with anything right now, it's not. There's nothing happened that will affect that.
Okay.
Essentially, all we've done so far is, and we haven't finished it, we're making a copy of every page of both the stock car and the drag racing websites, and putting that into a file so that we'll be able to migrate the whole thing. So anyway, the biggest change that most people will need to get used to is we're combining both those sites, the drag racing site and the stock car site. Wish I had done that initially. Wish we would have had one Racers Reunion site. But back when the school of thought was create as many footprints as you possibly can, that's what I did. And there's actually 6, 7, 8 Racers Reunion websites. I wish I had them all under one roof. So I'm going to put at least 3, possibly 4 of them under one roof with this change. The photo galleries will be able to, you'll be able to search them independently. They'll all come together in one massive gallery, but you'll be able to search drag racing photos and stock car photos. It will not bring over all of the tags that we put on the current photos, which is a problem. I think the fact that we've renamed that are absolutely fantastic moderation crew have renamed about 80% of our photographs so that they all have some sort of meaningful name. What I regret most is that the tags that we've applied to it probably aren't going to come over, and that's a little bit of a loss, but I can't help it. All the forum content is going to come over as it is, so all that history that we've created there is going to be maintained. All the user profiles will come over once it's all done, and it's all live, and we've verified all the email addresses. You guys will all be given a temporary password to come log in and reset your password and go back to it and just learn how to use the new site. So that's it. It'll take me. My goal is, if my aggressive goal is that between Christmas and New Year's, at some point there, I'll hit the go live button, and hopefully I can have everything debugged by that point, and we'll be.
It doesn't go up in smoke.
Yeah, I hope it didn't go up in smoke. I know it's going to piss a lot of you old people off because I'm an old person that pisses me off. I cannot stand change. I like things just the way they are, but it's got to happen. So it's going to happen. That's enough about that. I put a post on the stock car site and on the drag racing site about it, so y'all can go there and get more information if you want to. It's a good thing. The only bad thing I can say about it is I know y'all hate change, and it's change. So. The only two people that are probably going to love it is Cody and Alex.
Right.
Everybody else is going to
bitch understand
about it. Yeah, everybody else is going to bitch about it.
We'll see.
So I will call one of those two to explain it to me.
Yeah, I need to teach those two guys and make them both moderators so they can help take care of it. But even the, that's another thing. Even the moderation is totally different. You know, with Ning, I had moderators set up in about 9 different categories. I got 3 with this site. But, you know, we'll figure that out. It's no big deal.
We have a celebrity on tonight.
Who's our celebrity?
Barb is on tonight with us.
Barbalus Santucci is on tonight. Good evening, Miss Barb. How you doing? I'm going to give Miss Barb some props while she's listening, because I don't do this. She hadn't heard me say this, I don't think. But she provides the guest list, arranges the guests, coordinates the guests for Racing and Rockin' Radio for Bill Pratt and John Bachelman. And she lines up some of the most amazing talent to be on that show and to do those interviews. And she does such a wonderful job that she makes the contact, she sets up the interview, and then an hour before the show she calls them and reminds them, Jeff's going to call you, this is what he's going to say, and this is the way it's going to work. So every time I get one of those people on the line, they know exactly what's going to happen, and most of them even call me by name. And I think that's really cool, because she's informed them so well of what we do that they're ready to go. So Racing and Rockin' Radio is doing a wonderful job with Bill Pratt and his guys. They have and continue to interview wonderful people in the world of drag racing. It's an awesome show. If you haven't caught it, you need to. So there. All right. I got my piece out of the way. We got a couple more minutes here before we get Mr. Hissom on. What do y'all want to do? Anybody want to talk about racing?
Well, it's like Alex said, it drew a 0.0 this week, which is
down 10% from last year.
But, you know, looking at the overall disallowing the comments that Brian France made in his supposedly news conference, the things that I'm hearing through the loops about next season are sounding pretty good right now.
Some of it, because I haven't heard it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, share with us.
Yeah, what's good?
They're making the rule changes a little bit to give them a little bit less of this aero push problem, even though I technically know what it is. I don't understand what they're doing. They're also doing some rules to make it a little bit stricter on these cars that fail the post-race inspections. And there was a big discussion on one of the news feeds that Kyle Busch, I think, in the race that he won to qualify for the Final Four and for the chase, had a loose lug nut, but they didn't penalize him for that. But, you know, when you read all this stuff, it's like Cody just said, you never know what to believe. You can make it up if you want to and go with it. So I don't know what the whole story is, but it's just looking like maybe Daytona might even draw a fairly decent crowd. But we'll have to wait and see. You know Greg Biffle is out of racing. Tony Stewart is now gone. They're putting, I forgot who they're putting in the number 13 car.
Ty Dillon.
Ty Dillon, yeah.
So that means Casey Mears is out, at least
Casey
at the moment.
Casey Mears is out.
Casey Mears had a 3-year contract. They just kicked him to the curb.
Yeah, and it looks like, as far as I know right now, that Petty Enterprises, Richard Petty Motorsports, will only be fielding the number 43, although that's not an official thing. So that's another charter up for lease or up for sale.
Where did Clint Bowyer go? Because he's suing his owner,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's going to the Tony Stewart car.
But he's suing for like $2 million.
Suing H. Scott Motorsports.
Yeah.
And Chris Buescher is going to, how do you say it, Daughtry Racing?
Yeah, JGT Daughtry second car. But he's just being farmed out from Ford, basically, in Roush, I guess.
Yeah, I believe they're keeping the number 16, but it's a RCR satellite deal, so I don't exactly know how Ford is all right with that. But
yeah, it was a deal like, remember when Casey Kane drove one of the Red Bull cars, which was a Toyota at the time, okay, when he was waiting for the Hendrick ride to open up? It's a similar deal. It's the manufacturer decides we'd rather have him on the track doing something, even if it's not in our brand, than, you know, than not doing that. So,
huh,
that's how that.
Interesting. His brand's more important than the brand. So, folks, without further ado, let us bring on our very special guest tonight. Mr. Bob Hissom is with us. Stocks for Tots coming right up. Mr. Hissom, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing just fine, I tell you. How's everybody there doing?
Man, we're feeling better, we'd be you. You know, I often get up in the morning and I think, what would Bob do? You know, I mean, I try very hard to pattern my life after you, Mr. Hissom. I think that you're one of a kind.
Boy, you're in trouble there.
We're getting deep in the studio.
Cool beans, man. So give us the lowdown on the Stocks for Tots. What's going on up there, man?
Okay, Stocks for Tots is going to be December 13th. And my Legends room will start it off again from 5 to 7 o'clock. I've walked to NASCAR Tech School in Mooresville. I've asked a lot of the Legends drivers to come over to the North Carolina Auto Racing Hall of Fame. I turn in there by Chick-fil-A on 150 there by I-77. And I'd come over in the afternoon. We have a lot of people comes over there, and they'd like to meet and greet some of them. But anyway, we've got about 46 people coming again, and also got my understanding that Jeff's going to have a broadcast out of there too.
Yes, we are.
And, that's fantastic there, and we always like the help there. And anyway, the other room starts up about 7:30, and that'll be like some of your today drivers, drag racing, Indy car racing. Just a little bit of everything. Elliot Forbes Robinson's planning on coming. There's one of the greatest road racers ever was Hyperstone. That's one of my top three fellows right there. But we got a fantastic time coming up, and this this is our 28th year at it. And our little museum there in Mooresville, over the past 28 years, we have give back over $1 million to SCAN, that's Stop Child Abuse Now. So that's a wonderful thing. That's
a major accomplishment.
Over there does. Yeah. Everybody's volunteers there, and we have a really good organization there.
Yeah, that's awesome, Bob. It really is. It's a great deal, man. And when we started coming to it, we were over there downtown Mooresville, where people had to stand outside in the rain and the snow and wait to get in, and they were lined up all the way around the building. And and now this NASCAR Technical Institute, the facility there fits this extremely well, man. It's a first-class facility, and Johnny Dotson and all those guys up there do a wonderful job accommodating this thing, and it's always a pleasure to go up there and be part of that, and look what you guys have put together, man, and see it all happen. It's a cool deal.
You know, that's really a great thing that goes on. And we've got so many good Legends racers and things like that. Just some of the people that's going to be come is Bill Blair Jr. be there, Billy Biscoe, Johnny Handy, Don Johnson. That was Rex White's crew chief from 1955. Of course, Brian King and Paul Lewis, the boys from over, over in Tennessee there for us. Eddie Sperling's coming. Barry Dawson wants to come. Frank Warren said he's going to try to make it. Ned Jarrett, Richard Petty and Dale Inman's going to be there. Bobby and Donnie Allison. Lynn Evans, that was Richie Evans' wife, one of the most famous modified drivers ever was. And her husband now is Billy Natsowitz. Well, he it was crew chief for Richie for 8 of his 9 national championships. So that guy's really got a lot of credentials. Then he went into the Busch Series with Randy LaJoy and Travis Quaffle and won a couple more championships in there. But Bobby and Donnie Allison's coming, Mike Sykes, Charlie Roberts, Jerry Nader's going to be there. So, you know, this just keeps going on right there, and just going to be a fantastic time there. Just a great time like we always have.
Yeah, you always do, man. You always do. It's great. And Mr. Isom, you do a wonderful job, man, all these things that you're involved in and putting this stuff together. We appreciate you very much, sir.
Oh, God. Well, I appreciate you guys. You always help us out. That's when you get the word out to people on this. I'm just a few people there that's trying to keep these legends' names going out there. And I've been at the museum for 21 years as a volunteer, and I don't have anything in sight about retiring from there or anything. I want to just keep it going. There's so many just good people right there that we just need these people's names out there. And if I may, we got another big function going on down the week in Daytona.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Lay it out for us, buddy. And we'll have you back on before then to really get into some detail, but lay it all out for us.
Okay. Well, it's back to the roots. This is going to be our fifth annual Back to the Roots, and that's at 316 Main Street. That's Bill Francis' garage, a lady named Sadra Lee, and Jenna Baker and myself. We founded this group, Back to the Roots group, and then we're having our second Marvin Panch brunch banquet, which will be several people's getting awards. Also, we're going to be doing a sidewalk induction of people getting bricks there. That'll be on Monday night on the 20th. On the 19th, it's going to be a round table. Over there, we got a lot of folks in there telling some stories there. Bill Blair is our host of it. He does a terrific job on that. And we just have a great time, and the brunch is like $25 on Tuesday. It starts at 10:30, but that gives you your brunch with and catfishes and all that, and just have a great time, man. It's about 3 to 4 days there of on the go all the time. So we have a good time with it.
That's been cool watching that event grow over the past few years too. You know, it just kind of blossomed out of. Out of that deal and has become one of the major events down there.
Yeah. Yes, it has right there. And, matter of fact, on Monday evening, I think it's around 5 o'clock, they'll be bringing legends around in a limo, and they'll walk the red carpet going up in front of everybody. And it's usually standing room only outside there when those legends come in. I mean, the people just really get excited. Then they go for an autograph station after that to help us out. And we have an auction, and a guy from Canada, Don Reinhart, he has a television show there, and it's just like Storage Wars we have on ours here out of California. Well, Don does it out of Canada, the same thing, and he's been our auctioneer for 3 years. He does a fantastic job for us right there, Dan.
That's
cool. Don's going to be on his way back down again this year.
That's cool, buddy. Good stuff, man. Good stuff. Well, Mr. Isom, you always have an open mic here with Racers Reunion. Whenever you got anything to say, I hope you never forget that.
Okay, well, I certainly appreciate that. And that was nice seeing you down in Myrtle Beach here.
I enjoyed that breakfast very, very much, man. We need to do that as often as possible.
Okay, well, good deal. We'll have to do that again.
All right, buddy. You take care, Bob. Tell everybody I said hello, okay, man?
Okay, I'll do that. Thanks again.
All right, buddy. Take care, man.
Okay, bye.
All right, folks, that was Mr. Bob Hissom with Stocks for Tots event coming up in Mooresville. Stocks, is that the website address, stocksfortots.com? I should have looked, I guess. You got all the information, Tim, the dates and stuff?
Yeah, it's December 13th, starts at 5 o'clock. Then the big time guys at Race Now will be in at 7 o'clock. The legends go from 5 until 7, and then the other group goes from 7. Till 9, it is stocksfortots.com. You can just put in Stocks for Tots and search, and it'll bring it up, and you can look at what their mission statement, everything you want to know about them is right there.
All right, man. Cool stuff. Highly recommend it to anybody that hadn't been there. Go check it out, man. Take a little gift with you to give, or a donation or something like that. It's a great cause. These guys do a wonderful job, Mr. Don Miller and all the guys behind that. And it's if nothing else, man, it's worth the trip just to get to go through that NASCAR Tech Center up there, because you won't believe that place, man. It's like the ultimate racing garage.
It is amazing. Yeah, it is absolutely amazing.
All right, we're going to slide right on in here without even taking a break. We're going to go over to Bopper tonight and see what he's got up his sleeve. He's got a towel out wiping his brow already.
Just brings tears to my eyes.
He's already shed a tear, man. We ain't even halfway through the show tonight.
Got my feet up on the footrests.
Yeah. How you doing tonight, Bopper?
Doing good.
Good, man. It's good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Yeah. What do you got on? You mind?
I read this on. This was a Facebook post that I read one day, and it was so blatantly true but inexplicable. And I agreed with the writer, and I just thought, and I'll just throw it out. This is for everybody. Feel free to chime in as to why this is true. Most racers, race fans of the modern era. What is your opinion of Chad Knaus? Most people think he's a cheater.
Yeah, instead of one of the greatest crew chiefs in the history of racing.
Is he a cheater in the vein of Ray Evernham, or a cheater in the vein of Junior Johnson?
All of the above.
Inside or outside of the rules?
Yeah.
Always outside.
In the gray area.
Here's what
makes Chad Knaus so good, in my opinion. We've all talked about this since we've been doing this back when we were all younger. Every generation of the rule book that occurs, you know, the gray area gets tighter, gets smaller.
Yep.
And the guys that find a way to work within that gray area, man, I mean, it's just an evolution of the sport. In my book, that's what makes Chad Knaus, to me, as of this day in history, one of the greatest crew chiefs that's ever been behind a race car. And I don't know where Bobby was going with that. I just blurted it out.
Okay, well, you did a great job of
stealing your segment.
Well, yeah. but that's only half of the question. Yeah. Most modern race fans will quickly say, yeah, Chad Knaus, they win a lot, but he cheats.
Yeah.
You know, that's the second.
They all do.
That's the second half of the sentence now. And because of that, we don't like him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
He's just a cheater. Nah, 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 nah. Liar, liar, pants on fire. Now, when you say Smokey Unick,
yep,
the ultimate cheater.
Now, why does he get sainthood?
Yeah, I mean,
he was better than everybody else, in my opinion.
The gray area was as wide as the ocean back then.
Right, yeah. And I say that in all due respect. I'm a Smokey Unick fan, like everybody is.
Absolutely.
But why? And you can't explain it. Why is it? Everybody knew Smokey was a cheater.
Because he was more of an innovator,
and he is accoladed. Chad Knaus has.
Was Smokey accoladed at the time, though?
Not as much as he is today.
And I think that'll be the case with Chad.
I agree with you.
But the reactions are totally opposite, and it's the issues are exactly the same.
In history, in retrospect, I think Chad Knaus will be treated much the same as Smokey Unick, Junior Johnson, the old school. There's a whole list of the other crew chiefs and innovators, but probably Junior Johnson and Smokey Unick rise to the top. Ray Evernham the next generation and Chad Knaus's current generation.
If you read, and everybody should, every serious advocate of the history of racing, you need to read Driving with the Devil.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the best book.
Or listen to
There's
the audio
not book. Even nothing close to it.
No.
Yep.
There's no, nothing. There's
nothing. It's like a required encyclopedia if you're going to be in this part of the, on this side of the deal.
Yeah, know? The rest of them are just, they're just nothing.
Yeah.
But racing with the, if you read Racing with, Driving with the Devil, you will learn that the ultimate, the guy that laid down the law of cheating and reading between the rules and all of that, the great grandfather of all of this was not Smokey Unit.
All right, Cody, who was it?
Might have been Red Vogt.
It was Red. All right, take a bow, Cody. You're the man. Red Vogt.
Yeah.
Established.
Ah, he established the whole thing. You're right. Yeah.
He was so ahead of his time that he didn't get, you know, Smokey was in the 50s and he got some notoriety, but Red Vogt got none.
Yeah.
Just nobody even well, now.
There was so little in the way of rules that it was hard to say that he was violating the rules.
Well,
he was just an innovator.
A lot of the rules were made as a result of what he did.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Red Vogt's his heyday perhaps was in the modified era, which was the first thing NASCAR had in 1948 when they went into business. That was all they had was modified.
Yeah.
And modified meant they were so his cars were so modified they was almost not even Fords.
Yeah.
You know, which they started out being. But that was fine. He didn't, you know, his wizardry was much, you know, much sought after. But the next year, 1949, when they started the Strictly Stock series, that's when everything changed. Because Strictly Stock, the rule book, was the factory's parts manual.
Yeah.
Every car's parts manual. If the part in a car didn't match up with that manual, yeah, you was unlegal.
No moonshine springs.
Yeah.
None of that stuff.
And all that mess. No shortened push rods and everything. And so they almost eliminated the genius of Red Vogt. They almost let, but he still... he founded, I mean, not trying to, but he founded the technique of reading between the lines.
Absolutely, yeah.
Of doing what they necessarily say. So he was actually the godfather of all of them. And Smokey fell right into that.
Yeah, he just stepped right into his shoes in the next generation. But you were talking about the factory parts manual. And that's when the factories begin to get involved in it, because since the rule book said that there had to be a stock part, then the factories begin to make special parts for the race cars.
And the production cars.
And listed them in the parts manual.
Absolutely. Of course, they had to sell, 3,000 automobiles or something like that at the time?
But then
that got shortened down to 500 during the late 60s.
Yeah.
But they still had to make them.
But the interest was to keep racing alive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
first thing that comes to my mind was the 1962 Chevrolet race car. Had people said, oh, it's a 61. No, it was a 1962 Chevrolet Bel Air two-door hardtop, which retained the sloped back 61 roof.
Yeah.
It didn't have the roof on it like the Impala that you bought off showroom floor.
That's
had.
An interesting little tidbit right there.
That was a perfect example of the factory building something to race.
They sold those.
Oh, yeah.
I remember seeing a little old lady in Camden years ago driving a 62 with that 61 top on it or whatever they called it.
Yep, it was a 62. Two Bel Air two-door hardtop. I found one on a used car lot in Hickory, and I tried every way in the world to come up with enough money to buy that thing because I knew someday it was going to be a museum piece.
Well, I wanted to chase her down, and I couldn't get out from the stoplight to chase her down, and I saw her about three times and never saw it after that.
Right foot floozy.
You know, even in the
Starliner, too, like that.
Early 60s at Daytona, by the fact they knew enough about aero to know that a slope back
was faster.
Glass was faster than a notchback.
Well, and they called them fast back and slow back in the early 60s.
This was out, the wind tunnel was the racetrack.
Yeah, right.
And the 60 Ford Starliner and all of that was a direct result. The Ford fastback of 63 and 64, all of that, and like you say, that Impala top on Pontiacs and stuff.
Yep. So you started this off talking about Chad Knaus.
Well, innovation.
So what's your take on it, Bobby?
Well, I think that we time is a great romanticizer, you know, especially with us.
Yep.
Our generation, we are through the point that if it happened back in the day, it's a lot better than what's going on now.
That's absolutely.
That's our mindset. Whether it's it's true.
We liked it better then than we do now. I don't give a shit what it was.
No matter
I'm not supposed to say it on the radio. Yeah. Sorry.
But it's true.
I apologize.
Yeah, I think, you know, we romanticize and the good old days and all of that. And Smokey was our man. You know,
absolutely.
He was, and so even if he cheated, it was better cheating than Chad Knaus. And we ain't going to hold it against him.
God bless him. God bless him. Amen.
I think that's why, although, you know, it's the same character, the same story, the same everything.
It is.
Yeah. One is vilified, the other is a folk hero.
But I think Jimmy Johnson and Chad Knaus both, man, have never gotten the credit they deserve, okay? I get the whole Chase era, the difference in the eras and all that crap. But I still understand that everything is relative, okay? And when you talk about relativity and the talent and the equipment that is in NASCAR today, to stand out the way those guys have stood out is an unbelievable accomplishment.
Yeah, because, I mean, we joke about it, but the cars are so identical now, they have to measure them with a laser. Down through the thousandths of an inch, and you're called wrong if you don't fit into these incredible top. Yeah. So it's basically a spec series.
Yep, it is.
I mean,
it has become a spec series.
It's a spec series.
With decals on the front.
That's right. It's an IROC, if you will.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's almost,
and sadly, we know what happened to that.
Yeah. But anyway, what you said, Jeff, makes it even more, enforces the fact that given this spec series, this team always somehow, more than anybody else, rises to the occasion. So whatever they're doing, you you could say, well, he didn't win the regular chance, but he won the format that they had at the time.
So, and the conspiracy theorists that are out there, if the conspiracy theories and the whole idea of having a conspiracy theory was anywhere close to being accurate, Dale Earnhardt Jr. would be the champion.
Right.
Because they stand to lose the most with him leaving the sport, which he probably will shortly anyway. But, look, we've all been around the sport long enough to know that favoritism is given to those who they want to receive it. I've seen it. I've been there. I've been part of it. I mean, I've seen...
You've been on both sides of it, haven't you?
Yep. I've seen vehicles go through the inspection line that didn't fit a damn thing and be allowed to race. And I had one of them, you know. I mean, I understand. It wasn't mine. I was on the team. You know, it was our car, exactly a truck. But anyway, that's happened since the inception, since the beginning of it. Bill France Jr. said, It's our circus, and we get to pick the clowns.
That's right.
Okay? That was one of his sayings. And they did. You know, they made sure that they managed it as much as they possibly could to get the results that they could, but it was racing as we know it. And it's being managed today. But given all those things, and considering all those things and all this relativity, Chad Knaus is a phenomenal crew chief, man. And history will tell his story as being one of the best that's ever been behind a race car.
He will be just exactly that in another generation. Yeah. And I think that's probably true with all of the generations that we've talked about.
Who's the guys in the 70s and 80s? Who's after Smokey and before Chad?
Harry
Hyde, Harry Hyde.
Possibly Dale Inman, the Wood Brothers, Junior Johnson undoubtedly goes
there. Alex said Ed Negrete.
Yeah.
what was the guy's name? Won't come to me. That was Earnhardt's crew chief.
Kirk Shelmerdine.
He ought to go down as one of them.
Yeah.
He never has gotten it. Well,
Kyle Petty's crew chief that ended up being a NASCAR inspector. What was his name?
Gary Nelson.
Gary Nelson. Yeah. One of the best ever. Yeah. So there's a whole lot of those guys, man. And if you think
about it. Yeah, and everything Hoss Ellington ever done was illegal.
Absolutely.
It was never legal in their life.
I think people paid him just to show up to take attention off of them. You know what I mean?
I still think that this round that caused Jimmy Johnson to start in the back was a smokescreen. It's kind of like the guy that's got an illegal oversized load. What does he do when he pulls into the state? He takes one of his oversized load flags off, so they give him a ticket for that, and they don't look at anything else.
I mean, you know, that's the oldest game in racing. Yep. We used to,
and that's exactly what I thought. Especially
we used to rub the numbers off our tires and scrub them off.
Yeah,
you know, just
well, I've hit the wall.
Well, no, we just do that so they'd think, oh, he's cheating on his tires. They'd go look at that instead of something else. Or we'd cover.
Yeah, they would look at the drop spindles.
Yeah, we go put something up. We go put a tarp up over the back end of the car so nobody could see it.
Yeah,
you know,
and the cheat was all on the front.
The cheat was on the front.
Well, I've got about a 36-second segment.
Take it away, man.
It goes with this.
Take it away.
So, having said all this about Jimmy Johnson and his current ride, how many of you out there think that Jimmy Johnson is going to be awarded another championship so he makes number 8?
I think he will.
I agree with you. I think they're going to push for him to have a number 8.
Yeah.
Jack's over shaking his
head. No, I'm just thinking.
It's a new era, man.
He's got the momentum. You know,
it's a new era.
Very well happen.
Yeah, it's time for that.
I would think
he understands the chase.
That NASCAR would promote that because it's something new and different. A lot of us.
Hey, guys, listen. We talked about this before the show tonight. Nobody really gives a crap about the history of this sport but us.
Amen, brother. Amen.
You know what I mean? They really don't. The only thing that's important right now is how do we make what we've got now work. And the best way they can make what they have now work is make Jimmy Johnson the best that there ever was.
I think to that end, and this is just my opinion, and he was a great talent, and it was smart. If this is part of, in 1992 and 1993, NASCAR lost first of all Alan Kulwicki,
yep,
who was a rising star. People loved him. He was the underdog, the little guy, and he still got the job done.
Yeah.
They lost him. Then on top of that, they lost Davey Allison, who was another up and comer.
History would not have been the same.
But. If that's what you've been given, and that's what NASCAR wound up with, they lost two potential superstars in a matter of months.
Yep.
I think the strategy turned. We got to make Jeff Gordon's got to become the next man.
Yep.
The rival. They still had Earnhardt.
Yep.
But somebody's got to come along.
Jeff Gordon was the perfect NASCAR.
He was the perfect.
He came at the perfect time.
That's
the
time. And I think that was not lost on the brain trust.
No way, man. No, you're right.
I think that it was. You know, they could only orchestrate so much, but I think they certainly was pleased with the way it all turned out.
I agree 100%.
They had this fresh faced kid who had proven himself on the short tracks, and they put him out there and said, follow that guy in the number 3 and do what he does.
Yeah.
Well, he followed him for a couple of races, and then he thought, I can do better than that, and just passed him.
Yep.
And, of course, the fans just ate that up, and NASCAR they capitalized on it forever.
Oh, yeah. It was perfect.
It was
great.
It was a perfect.
Great marketing. It was brilliant.
And the first time they interviewed that fresh-faced little kid and found out that he was an articulate speaker, hey, it was on then.
So let's say this, okay? We've all been very critical of NASCAR, and rightly so, because we're fans of it. We helped create it. We're responsible for a lot of it, regardless of what anybody else says. The drivers were a big part of it, but us fans made it happen.
Okay.
For anything to have survived, anything, any company, any sport, anything whatsoever, to have survived, regardless of its current condition, as long as NASCAR had, is an amazing accomplishment. It is
absolutely
an amazing accomplishment. Okay, we've been very critical here. We've talked about we think it's on the downturn. Obviously, it is. We've seen that in their TV ratings and their crowd counts and those kind of things. But yet, it's still managed, because of all the things we just talked about, to survive since 1948.
I guess we're all just scared that it might actually go away.
Yeah.
And we don't want to see that either.
Yeah. All right, let's end it right there. Coastal Jack Walker is in the house with the Carolina Race Place. Historic race finish straight from the archives of CarolinaRaceplace.zoomshare.com, which is brought to you in part, ladies and gentlemen, by Bobby's Auto Parts, the home of the endless warranty from Shalott, North Carolina. Take it away, CJ.
All right. Tonight for the Carolina Race Place historic race finish. Since this is Snowball Derby week,
it is.
We are going back.
Saturday.
Yeah, this Sunday.
Are y'all going?
No, I'm gonna watch it on pay-per-view though.
No, we're going to the Bell and Bell reunion.
That's Saturday.
Yeah.
This is Sunday.
All right, carry on.
All right, thank you. I appreciate that.
Two days.
All right, Five Flag Speedway, Pensacola, Florida. 200-lap late model sportsman race, the 8th annual Snowball Derby, December the 9th, 1975. The 8th annual Snowball Derby for late model stock cars was held at Five Flag Speedway in Pensacola, Florida, on Sunday, December 9th, 1975. The 1975 race had a purse of $17,850. 106 late models showed up trying to secure a starting spot in the 50-car starting field.
50 cars.
Yeah, this is the first year they went to 50, by the way.
Half-mile track.
Half-mile paved track. Bobby Allison of Hueytown, Alabama, won the pole position on Saturday with a lap of 100.84 miles per hour around the half-mile paved oval driving a Camaro. Starting on the outside front row was the 1974 Derby winner, Pete Hamilton. On Sunday, when the cars lined up on the grid for the Snowball Derby, there were four cars missing. Two of those cars missing were driven by Ray Putman and David Pearson. Putman had qualified 7th, and Pearson had qualified 22nd. Both cars were disqualified for having oversized engines in Sunday morning inspection. When the green flag waved starting the race, Bobby Allison went to the lead. In the early laps, Allison was closely followed by Pete Hamilton, Jody Ridley, Donnie Allison, and Butch Lindley. On lap 56, Joe Ruttman dropped out of the race with mechanical problems and in his Chrysler kit car. On lap 65, Jody Ridley and Pete Hamilton got together in the third turn. Hamilton went off the bank and was out of the race. Donnie Allison passed Bobby Allison for the lead on lap 75. Buck Simmons retired from the race on lap 89. Bobby Allison retook the lead from Donnie Allison on lap 103. On lap 127, Jack Ingram and Darrell Waltrip got together while fighting for position. Ingram spun off the third turn. Ingram was able to refire his Camaro, then rammed into Waltrip's door under the caution flag. Waltrip was able to continue, but Ingram was done for the day. Bobby Allison ducked into the pits for fuel on lap 183. When Allison returned to the track, he was trying to work his way back up to the front when he got together with Ronnie Sanders. Sanders spun off the track as the 14th caution flag of the day waved on lap 191. Sanders got his wrecked Camaro restarted and came back on the track looking for Allison. He was trying to get to Allison, but pulled right out in front of Chuck Arnold, forcing Arnold into the front stretch wall. Sanders again spun off the track, got out of his car, and tried to hit Allison with his helmet as Allison came under the caution flag, came by under the caution flag. That didn't work, so next Sanders ran to the pits and grabbed a tire tool. That's when deputies caught up with Sanders, putting him in handcuffs and removing him from the track. The Snowball Derby rules required the final five laps to be run under the green flag, so the race was restarted on lap 200. On lap 205, Donnie Allison took the checkered flag, winning $2,790 for the victory. Allison went the entire distance without a fuel stop. The first six cars crossed the finish line in the same lap. There were over 5,000 fans in attendance. All right, here's the way they finished. Again, this is the 8th Annual Snowball Derby in Pensacola on December 9th, 1975. The winner, Donnie Allison, Hueytown, Alabama, driving a Chevelle, followed by Dickie Davis, Pensacola, Florida, Darrell Waltrip, Owensboro, Kentucky, Ed Howe, Beaverton, Michigan, Neil Bonnet, Hueytown, Alabama, Steve Britt, Pensacola, Florida, Freddie Fryer, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Dave Mader III, Homewood, Alabama. Jody Ridley, Chatsworth, Georgia. Finishing 10th, Steve England, Mobile, Alabama. Frank McMorris, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Wayne Nidecken, Pensacola, Florida. Bobby Allison, Hueytown, Alabama. Ed Hoffman, Niles, Illinois. David Chansey, Unadilla, Georgia. Russell Nelson, Atlanta, Georgia. Red Farmer, Hueytown, Alabama. Jerry Simpson, Leroy Dixon, Bobby Foster was 20th. Chuck Arnold, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Ronnie Sanders, Fayetteville, Georgia. J.D. Hughes, Sundown, Texas. Dickie Wilson, Pensacola, Florida. Wilson Pitchett, Ronnie Pitts, Candement, Florida. Ivan Perankowski, Pensacola, Florida.
Perankowski
Racing Incorporated.
Yeah.
Phil Wentz, Irvington, Alabama. Jackie Young, Ebb, Alabama. Tom Galbraith, Jack Ingram, Asheville, North Carolina, finished 31st. Bob Davison, Pensacola, Florida. Butch Lindley, Greenville, South Carolina. C.L. Fisher, Dalton, Alabama. Junior Nidecken, Pensacola, Florida, 35th. Joe Shear, Rockford, Illinois. Buck Simmons, Baldwin, Georgia. Larry Phillips, Springfield, Missouri. Cecil Jones, Pensacola, Florida. Pete Hamilton, Denton, Massachusetts, finished 40th. Luther Carter, Kenshaw, Georgia. Joe Ruttman, Dearborn, Michigan. Royce Johnson, Pensacola, Florida. John Sanders, Mike Alexander, Franklin, Tennessee. Rat Lane, Mobile, Alabama, came in 46th. And the other four cars, I have no idea. I guess one of them was Ray Putman and one of them was Pearson that didn't get to start, and probably two more that I couldn't find mentioned.
Since all of them were spinning off the track, they didn't have walls.
They didn't have walls now. Yep. Kind of like Watermelon Capital Speedway, where you just have an embankment and just go off the bank.
Sort of like our dirt tracks.
That's the way a lot of tracks were in 75.
And that's the way it was, folks, 1975, the Snowball Derby.
Yeah, man, just think of the drivers in that race.
That's a cool list.
Who in racing in 75?
That is a cool list. We still need to put together this list of people, man. You know?
Including books.
Nine years.
Every time Jack does another Carolina race place, we find new drivers that we've never heard of before.
It's incredible, man. It really is.
Well, I tell you, I'd never heard about that story with Ronnie Sanders. I'm going to have to ask him about that.
You ask him about it. Verify it, Cody.
So, guys, we got about 8 minutes left. Tim, have you got anything that you want to add? Did you have a legendarial, or were you using Bob Hissom as yours?
I was using Bob Hissom tonight because I figured
and I hijacked
that time. I was concerned that we, like I said earlier, we had kind of skipped over Bopper 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
And I know he puts a lot of work into putting together a piece for the show. And I was feeling
He does it all while you guys are doing yours, so you know. Cody, lay it on us, man. What you got?
What do you want to know?
Well, you said true or false. You could do it. Take it, man. You got 5 minutes. Fill it.
Well.
Have they given you a Porsche to drive yet? Porsche.
And let's remind everyone the difference between a porcupine and a Porsche.
What is it?
The porcupine has the pricks on the outside.
You just got now, Cody now, fired.
Now, I'm not now Cody that. Will have a comeback.
All right, Cody, lay it on us, buddy. What you got?
Well, nothing too much, but I can think up something real quick.
Well, you don't have to, man. Go ahead, Bobby.
You might couldn't help but notice that Buck Simmons was in the Snowball Derby. Cody, did you notice that? Did you catch that?
He didn't really race too much asphalt stuff. He was mostly on dirt.
That was a high level to start at.
He did race a couple in the Winston Cup.
Yes.
About 78, 9, and 80 for... I can't remember the guy's name, but it was the number 12 car.
The Ken Coal Mine, Kenny Childers, with the guy's name, Ken Coal Mining, was the
name. And, you know, he had a shot to get in the Dunleavy car, and they had a race at Dixie Speedway. It was him and Jody Ridley, and just a head-to-head match race, and whoever won the race would get the number 90 would get to drive the number 90 car in Atlanta that year. Well, that was 79, the last race of the year. And I guess they worked out something to where Jody would drive for him for the next few seasons in Winston Cup.
So that's how they won a race.
Yep.
Jody Ridley did win at Dover.
Yeah. Well, Jody was a hell of a driver.
Yep. Yeah, he won a race with the old Trucksmore car. Yep. Probably the only one it ever won.
Yep.
Yeah, it was the only victory that Dunleavy had gotten. Now, I know something I can ask. So I was watching a video earlier in the day about where they had unveiled Earnhardt's new car for 2017. And he was, it's about a 30-minute long video. He was taking some questions and answers and all this kind of stuff. And one of the questions said, how much would it cost to get involved in racing at a very basic level? And he said $500. Now, I'm going to have to disagree with that. But he was explaining when he was a kid, he didn't really get any assistance from his father, but it was him and Carrie went to a junkyard and got a 78 Monte Carlo for $200. And then they got a roll cage from, was it Bahari? The one that Walter drove that Benz oil car?
Yeah, Bahari.
Yeah.
They got a roll cage from them for free, and they just they rebuilt the engine themselves as like some kind of street stock car, and they just bought used tires instead of buying new tires each time. And he said they had about $500-$600 in the whole thing, but of course that was what 25 years ago or something.
Was that car that was pink?
No.
This was
Earnhardt Jr. Jr. and Carey. Is what Cody's talking about. Cody Man Grit.
So this was early 90s, I'm sure.
Hmm. Yeah. Senior was one had the pink car.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I just don't feel like you could do that anymore for $500. And I could be wrong, but at least North Georgia prices aren't like that. I don't know how it is in
you
South
get
Carolina.
You car races pretty fairly cheap, can't you, Bobby?
Yeah, you might could do that. Yeah, probably could. But that would have been pretty cheap even back then.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Now, how much would it cost if somebody like myself wanted to get into the vintage dirt racing scene?
Well,
$4,500.
Yep.
You can still find vintage cars turnkey for in the $35,000 to $5,000 range. You know, and then they go on up from there. But you can still find them. As a matter of fact, Cody, I saw a 39 Chevrolet coupe with a 6-cylinder somewhere in Georgia for $4,000 yesterday on Racing Junk.
And that's exactly where I would go, is to the 6-cylinder class. And I mean, I think racing a 6-cylinder on dirt is some of the most fun you could possibly ever have, man. You got all kinds of usable power. You can modify the crap out of them. It's a cool thing.
Ask Sherman Gish.
Yeah. Sherman
watch him
write
spank
a book
him every time we race.
Sherman write a book on how to make a 6-cylinder work on dirt.
Oh, yeah.
Guys, we're going to have to run. Cody, thanks. Tim, thanks. Jack, Bobby, Splitter, thanks. All you fans out there, thank you. We appreciate you very much. And I just realized I don't have an...
That's all I got to say about that.
I don't have an outro in my queue up here. So
we're falling
where's
down.
Big D when you need him?
Well, the only thing, since my chat wasn't working, I'll just verbally say goodnight to everybody. Thank you for your support, and we'll see you next week.
All right, folks, that's it. You heard it all here. RacersReunion.com, the place for racing history. 9 years coming up in January. 15,000 contributors have contributed over 1 million pages of racing history content. The absolute largest racing history website on the planet. Thank you to all you folks that made that happen. As we always say, thanks to the men and women that serve in the military. Thank you for doing what you do so that we can all do this. To each and every one of you, good night and God bless all of you.